I just remember having this really strong desire to ensure everything was done perfectly and according to my vision. But as a result, I inadvertently stifled creativity. And then I realized that the negative impact of my micromanagement approach was just devastating. It not only demotivated my team members, but also prevented them from taking ownership of their work and developing their skills.
Hello and welcome to the Ben Morton Leadership Podcast. It's the weekly show that brings you inspiring interviews with senior leaders and genuine subject matter experts, all designed to help you be the very best leader you can possibly be. It's my gift to you and it's completely free. In this episode, I'm talking to James Mitchell. He's a seasoned business leader with a strong background in finance and executive leadership. James is currently the CEO of Vitality Corp, one of the biggest FMCG companies that you've probably never heard of. He oversees a global company of around 200 employees with an impressive annual turnover of £50 million sterling. With over a decade's experience as a CEO in the FMCG sector, James is widely recognised for his strategic business acumen and his commitment to fostering and building a positive workplace culture. In this episode, in this conversation, James will help you specifically by exploring the topic of how to avoid micromanagement and get really good at delegation. We'll also explore how we as leaders can manage our energy, stay resilient, and his approach to self-care. We touch on why relationship building and chatting with your reception and security team may be one of the best leadership moves that you can make. And we explore how you can successfully lead other leaders. And make sure you listen to every minute of this episode, because buried somewhere in this recording is a revelation that will literally blow your mind. It will be very obvious when you hear it, so there's no need to worry about missing it. That's enough by way of an introduction, though, so let's dive right in. Here is my interview with James Mitchell, CEO of Vitality Corp. James, can I start off by asking what leadership means to you? And there's two reasons for asking that question. Number one, it's a leadership podcast. And number two, it strikes me the more of these interviews I do, the more time I spend working with leaders and managers and studying leadership myself, I start to realize there are so many words we use in business where we don't all have a shared meaning about what they mean. So let's start right there. And what does leadership mean to you?
Well, to me, leadership is about guiding and inspiring others towards a common vision and goal. It involves taking responsibility for the success and well-being of the organization and its people. Leadership goes beyond simply managing tasks or giving orders. It's about setting a positive example, empowering others, and fostering a culture of collaboration and growth.
And James, you mentioned there a few times staying connected and connection, which is really interesting for me. It's certainly an area of focus in my work these days. My question, therefore, is how do you manage to stay connected to what's going on in the organization? Because, again, my experience shows me that I think that's something that a lot of leaders struggle with, right? Because I think maybe as you become more senior, people don't want to give the boss bad news, or perhaps the messages that get to you have been filtered through multiple layers of management. So how do you keep, without being terribly cliched, how do you keep your finger on the pulse, James?
Well, staying connected to what's happening across a large organization is a challenge. And I appreciate the importance of maintaining an accurate understanding of the organization's pulse. To combat this challenge, I employ a few strategies. Firstly, it's about open and transparent communication. By creating a culture that values honesty and encourages feedback, I hope to minimize any barriers that might prevent employees from sharing information or concerns. There are regular check-ins and one-on-one meetings. I make it a point to have regular check-ins and one-on-one meetings with my direct reports and other key individuals throughout the organization. I mean, these meetings provide an opportunity for open dialogue where I can directly listen to their perspectives and challenges and successes. And by engaging with various teams and individuals, I gain valuable insights and a deeper understanding of the organization at different levels.
And James, what would you say throughout your career, even spanning back to some of your earliest leadership and management roles maybe, what would you say is the biggest challenge you've faced, and what did you learn or take from it?
One of the biggest leadership challenges I faced was during a period of significant organizational change. We were undergoing a major restructuring with downsizing, we redefined roles, and we were implementing new processes and systems. The challenge was to navigate and change effectively whilst maintaining employee morale and engagement and productivity. I learned a valuable lesson about the importance of clear and empathetic communication. I realized that while it is crucial to communicate the what and how of the changes, it's equally important to address the why behind them. Employees need to understand the rationale and the long-term vision, as it helps them see beyond the immediate disruption and connect with the bigger picture. I also recognized the significance of active listening and empathy. I made a deliberate effort to create opportunities for open dialogue where employees could express their concerns, ask questions, and share their perspectives.
That's really interesting, I think, James. And like, there have been so many books written about change management. I think if we're honest, it is something that continues to be done quite badly. But I like the focus you put there on listening and empathy. I think, again, as much as many of us might talk about those things, do we really display empathy and step into the shoes of the people that work for us who are going to be affected by it? So it's interesting to hear how much focus you put on that.
Yeah, it's incredibly important.
And James, whilst you've just shared one of your most significant challenges as a leader, would you be happy to share a mistake that you've made as a leader? Something that went wrong where you felt you'd...
I don't make mistakes, Ben.
I'm sure you don't. But if there was one, what would it be? Like, yeah, something if you could perhaps have your time again, you'd go back and do even slightly differently.
Well, there are a few, let's be honest. But I think that early in my career as a CEO, I made the mistake of micromanaging my team.
That old chestnut, as they say.
Well, you know, there are so many specific mistakes I could be talking about, but I think for the listeners, I think, you know, something that they can perhaps take from this, and it's something that happens all over. And I find myself wanting to do it sometimes still, but really talking myself out of it with the micromanaging. But I had I just remember having this really strong desire to ensure everything was done perfectly and according to my vision. But as a result, I inadvertently stifled creativity, hindered individual growth, created a sense of dependency on me for decision-making. And then I realized that the negative impact of my micromanagement approach was just devastating. It not only demotivated my team members, but also prevented them from taking ownership of their work and developing their skills.
That's really interesting, James. And it is interesting that you shared sort of micromanagement there, which was unprompted, right? We've not spoken about this in advance. And it's interesting because, again, like my work as a coach and mentor, and in my leadership training workshops as well, being able to delegate effectively and letting go is probably one of the most common things that I hear people struggling with or wishing they could be better at. So what's sort of your experience with, I guess, learning to delegate and letting go of a little bit of control? And what would you say sort of your number one tip for anyone who is having that struggle themselves right now?
Let me think. Early in my leadership journey, I struggled, really struggled with delegation, like I said, because I just felt the need to have the control over every aspect of the work. But as I gained experience and learned from my mistakes, I recognized the importance of delegation in empowering my team and fostering their growth. My number one tip, I guess, for effective delegation is to focus on clear communication. When delegating tasks or projects, it's crucial to communicate the desired outcome, expectations, and any necessary guidelines or constraints. Ensure that your team members have a clear understanding of what needs to be achieved, the timeline they've got, and any specific parameters. But I also think feedback and check-ins are key. It's about establishing a feedback loop to monitor progress and provide guidance and offer constructive feedback. It allows you to stay informed while still empowering your team to take ownership of their work.
It's really interesting there, James, just how much focus it seems to me that you put on clear and effective communication. It's something already in this short conversation I've heard you say again and again. And I think you're right, it's so important with delegation, right? I think so often...
Well, it's absolutely key to make sure everyone's clear in your vision. Then you don't have to kind of keep revisiting that, because if you're clear from the start, fewer mistakes down the line. And, you know, people can take on that responsibility themselves, and you don't feel like you're having to permanently check up that they're doing, you know, things that you may not have expressed. And it avoids a lot of unnecessary conflict as well.
Well, yeah, that's key as well, the unnecessary conflict thing, isn't it? Because like even with my kind of small team I have now supporting me in my business, if I delegate something to Susie, who helps with the community management, or Amanda, my former PA, and what I get back isn't what I kind of was expecting or what I hoped for, I don't know, I guess 9 times out of 10, and bearing in mind like 90% of statistics are made up on the spot, but 9 times out of 10, it's probably my fault, right? Because I wasn't clear in my communication about what it was that I wanted, or to your point, what the parameters were. So yeah, it's easy to point the finger, but often there's some fingers pointed back at us, right?
Well, we're all under pressure, and I think it's just being a leader, the buck has to stop at you. But, you know, as opposed to waiting for that buck, you have to make sure it never comes, because you've been clear from the start. And it's only fair on those you're delegating to. So they give them the opportunity to do a great job, because that's why they're in your organization, right?
Yeah, absolutely. James, taking a slightly different tack now, how would you say your approach to leadership, maybe your style even, has changed or evolved as you've moved from sort of being that initial team leader where you are leading sort of people who are responsible for actually doing the doing themselves, to sort of use that phrase, to now leading other leaders who are running their own functions, departments, or divisions?
Well, moving from leading individual contributors to leading other leaders brings significant adjustments in a leadership approach. What comes to mind immediately is it's about shifting my focus more towards strategy and vision. My focus has shifted more towards setting the strategic direction and vision for the organization. I spend more time aligning the leaders' efforts with the overarching goals and ensuring their teams are working toward the same vision. It requires a broader perspective and a deeper understanding of the industry landscape and market trends. I now tend to focus less on my own leadership development and more on developing the leadership skills of my direct reports. That includes providing mentorship, coaching, opportunities for growth. I invest time in helping them enhance their leadership capabilities and to delegate effectively and inspire their own teams. One final thing I'd say is around the need to balance autonomy and alignment. Leading leaders requires striking a balance between granting autonomy to individual leaders and ensuring alignment with the overall organizational objectives. It's important to provide space for leaders to make their own decisions and lead their teams. So whilst also ensuring cohesion and collaboration across departments or business units.
So you're now 2 years into your third CEO role, James. What would you say for those people listening to this show who are aspiring to a CEO role? What three pieces of advice would you give them?
Okay, firstly, I'd say embrace continuous learning. As a first time, it's probably the obvious one, but setting a clear vision and strategy. As a CEO, it is essential to set a clear vision and strategy for the organization.
It's interesting there again that you mentioned, or you put such a focus yourself on building and nurturing those relationships. It's something that more and more for me, I'm focusing on. In one of the latest sort of keynote talks I'm giving, I talk about the fact that I really believe that as leaders, we're very much, especially as senior leaders, we're very much in the business of building what I call relational bridges. And just like a real bridge is only as strong as the sort of materials it's built from and the care it receives over time. Like relationships between people are just the same, right? They're only as strong as the time and effort we invest in building and maintaining them. And it's interesting to hear that that's your sort of take and one of the key bits of advice you'd give to potential CEOs as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a famous play out there called Albert's Bridge into theatre, you see. And I always found this one quite interesting because it's a kind of true story, but it's an imaginary take on the life of the man who continually paints a fictitious bridge. But I think a lot of people, I've read in the papers over time, there are people who continually look after, maintain and paint specifically bridges. I mean, can you imagine that doing your job? You finish the last rivet, you get to the other side, and then suddenly here we go again, and you get your boat back over and another tin of paint and off you go. But it is that important just to keep that maintenance. And it's not a firefight. You're dousing the flames before they begin, you know. It's really important just to keep that maintenance up and, you know, maintain those relationships, both personal and business.
Without going too far with the bridge metaphor and taking us massively off track on my own show, James, I quite like researching a lot of these sort of metaphors and myths and stories to find out if there's any truth in them. You talking about that play, Albert's Bridge there, like certainly UK listeners to this show will probably have heard the metaphor. It's a bit like painting the fourth bridge in Scotland, which is what you're talking about, right? But it's so big, by the time you get to the end, you've got to start it. But
yeah.
But I wonder if there's actually any truth in that, or does the fourth bridge even still need painting, or who knows?
Oh, well, unless they've replaced it with titanium or something, I don't know. But no, I truly think there is a permanent maintenance scheme. It's permanently being painted, apparently.
And James, conscious of your time, I know we are recording this during the evening in half term, and we've both got kids of a similar sort of age, actually. So
we do, yeah, we do.
Let me get us back on track.
It's all right. She's got a sleepover at the moment, so she's entertained.
Good stuff.
See, strategy.
James, thinking again about your experience as a CEO. I guess in some ways this might be similar to some of the previous questions, but given your time again, is there anything you wouldn't do again, if that makes sense?
There are a few things I would advise against doing if I could go back in time. Number one would be neglecting self-care. I mean, you know, we all find ourselves too busy thinking of others, you know, thinking that's the correct thing to do. And yes, that is our aim and our goal, but you can only look for others when you look after yourself first. As a CEO, it's so easy to get consumed by the demands of the role and neglect personal well-being. I would emphasize the importance of self-care and a work-life balance. And it's interesting you bring up being here at home is so important to me. It was always something that I weighed up as a younger man, whether I wanted to sort of have family life or business life, but I believe you can have both. if you delegate effectively and, you know, you keep on top of your schedule. But I believe taking care of your physical and mental health, having time for hobbies, maintaining your personal relationships, like I said earlier, business and personal, it's so important. No one's mind is clear when they've got, you know, personal issues or relationships they feel are sort of falling by the wayside when you happens to us all, but it's so important to take time to fix that as well as, you know, your business relationships, because it's crucial for a long-term success and your own fulfillment. Otherwise, we burn out and there's no coming back from that. The other mistake would be, well, ignoring the stakeholder relationships. I mean, not allocating enough time to them, put it that way.
I'm glad you mentioned a bit there as well about family and balance and home life and stuff happening, because that's something that I think has changed a lot, maybe. I don't know what the time frame is, 10, 15 years. I think there was very much a old school leadership and management style that we used to hear, which was like, I don't care about your home life. Come to work, put that in a box, leave it. You're paid to do a job, which is, I don't know how to describe it. It's just
archaic.
Yeah, archaic. Is it is it farcical? Is it nonsensical? Like,
well, it's unrealistic for one.
Yeah,
everyone has relationships and families at home, whether they're demanding children or whether they're demanding elderly parents. Everyone is fighting their own battle, and for a lasting, successful team, it's really important to keep them flourishing and thriving. And the only way you can do that is by being felt like you're being seen and heard and not ignored. And I think to tell someone to leave any issues at the door is irresponsible. Yes, I believe we all have to take our own responsibility for letting those things affect our work, but ignoring them and making people pretend they don't exist is unrealistic and very unhealthy. And a team will not last, because if you're the leader and you're trying to lead a team through, you know, even just day-to-day tasks, yet you're ignoring, you know, a huge part of who they are, it's asking the unaskable. So I really truly believe that keeping those relationships healthy and fair is key to a successful team.
It reminds me of something, a story my wife come home and relayed probably 10 years ago, because I think it was very, very early on in my sort of consulting kind of coaching career. I think it was a previous boss had said to her, like, you know, Joe, if you are happy and content in your work, then you'll have a great home and family life. And at the time I was like, I think she's got that completely backwards, personally. I think, like, if you are happy at home and those relationships are good, then you're going to go to work and perform well in your job.
Well, I think they go hand in hand, don't they?
I do now. I don't think either of those is necessarily more important or takes primacy, right? There, because if you're really unhappy at work and have got a shit boss, excuse my French, that is absolutely going to have an impact on your family life at home. But vice versa, if you've got tension and dysfunction at home and you're feeling guilty because you're not putting enough time into those relationships, as you say, then that's going to spill over into work. So I guess back to your point around the balance that we always talk about, right? But balance means different things for different people though, right?
Mm. Well, it's just how you look at it. And I think it's important to take a step back sometimes and feel, you know, if you're work heavy one, to, you know, for a period of time, it's important to step back and just double check on that relationship or the, you know, the situation of the other side, whether it's home or work. You know, one can't exist without the other. I don't think, you know, and going back to sort of leaving things at the door, it's a balance. It's a, you know, it's literally a knife edge. And hopefully we're staying in the middle as much as possible. But yeah, it's a balance. If one thing goes, the other goes. So it's just as important to nurture both.
And I think final question, James, because as I say, it is evening time and we do want to both get back to our family and perhaps in some ways, this isn't a great example of balance, but it is, right? Because I don't know about you, I've taken most of this week off, so I do feel pretty balanced and I'm sure my...
Well, lucky you.
Yeah, I'm sure my wife and daughter will forgive me for nipping into the studio to do this. But you mentioned self-care there, probably quite topical at the minute. It's something that's getting a lot of coverage in certainly the sort of leadership and management press. So just in a few words, what does self-care mean and look like for you?
For me, it's a crucial aspect of maintaining overall well-being and ensuring long-term effectiveness, especially as a leader. While the specific practices of self-care can vary from person to person, there are three things that work for me anyway. My physical health. I recognise quite a long time ago the importance of physical health in maintaining energy and focus. I make time for regular exercise, whether it's going to the gym or having a walk or playing tennis, various activities I enjoy. I do also prioritise healthy eating habits where I can and ensure I get enough sleep. It's a biggie, getting enough sleep to rejuvenate and, you know, recharge. But as well as the physical health, obviously, as you said, it's a hot topic at the moment, and rightly so. Mental and emotional well-being is an essential part of self-care for me. I allocate time to reflect on my experiences, set personal and professional goals, and assess my progress, you know, because before anyone else does it for me, I quite like to just check up on where I'm at, you know. And then this helps me gain perspective and make adjustments and maintain a sense of purpose and direction, because, you know, sometimes we can all lose a little bit of that.
James, my mind is firing in all sorts of different directions listening to you speak there. There's so many things that resonate that just really quickly before we wrap up, I just want to, I don't know, highlight or underscore for people listening. Like the first one, which I think you said it without really putting too much emphasis on it yourself, but you mentioned about just popping down, going for a walk and saying hello to the security guard. From a leadership perspective, I think that is so, so important. And I was doing some work with a friend recently who now works at Google. It was a friend I was in the army with. We was at Google's offices in London, and he works in not the main building, the one across the road from them. And we was going out for a walk or to get a coffee, and he stopped and took like 30 seconds, right? But he stopped and said hello to the two ladies on reception, asked how they were, but genuinely like stopped to listen to their reply instead of like, hi, how are you, as he walked off. And I said to him, oh, mate, you can tell you was once a lieutenant colonel in the army, because like that relationship building thing, like walking about, talking to the troops, like the most junior thing, is just in the military DNA, but I don't see it quite as much in the corporate world. So like that, I think is super powerful.
Well, I think for one thing, it's having time, you know, to possibly help out those people that may be listening now thinking, God, I need to take it time to go down 11 floors and go and speak to Howard or Ken on the front door, who are, by the way, the people at my building, not just made up names.
Yeah.
But it's just taking that time, and purposefully I don't have coffee and things like that in my personal office because I can drink too much of it.
Yeah.
But B, I do like to take out a stroll at some point just to get some fresh air and sort of have a little bit of a purpose, as opposed to, you know, and I purposefully don't take any, you know, don't take my phone with me. It's literally 10 minutes. I can just go down and speak to Ken or Howard and just say hello. And they're just as important to me as any other conversations I have in the day. And, you know, I've known them for years and I genuinely kind of look forward to those moments. And sometimes when they're not there or if they're on a break and I sort of go, oh, and end up sort of just getting my prep and going back up. But, you know, it's really important. And I like to think it's not forced on my behalf. But I think, yeah, again, finding those enjoyable moments of the day where you can just breathe differently. Just take that moment just to breathe differently. However your, you know, approach is to leadership, we face a lot of challenges and a lot of pressure is on us. And it's just being very aware. One little thing I like to do is to literally if I'm in a lift or going down the stairs, is just to roll my shoulders back, just take a breath, and just, even if you're not feeling particularly stressed, you just, you know, feeling just sort of slightly tense, and it's just a nice thing to do every now and then, is just to reset literally how I stand, just take the weight off.
But that's to your point around mindfulness, right? As in, mindfulness isn't just sitting in a room cross-legged, counting your breath or saying a mantra, right? It can be doing that in the lift. It can be walking out of your office and being very mindful of your surroundings and saying hello to people instead of head down, looking at your smartphone, clearing a few emails whilst you're charging out to get a coffee. And the impact of that, if you are head down charging out to get your coffee, is, oh, the boss doesn't care, the boss doesn't say hello. Whereas the impact of doing it the way you do it is really significant, right? People go, oh, the boss stopped and asked how I was and pause for a few seconds to actually listen. It's that has an impact, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's very easy to walk around an office or around a building and kind of have business on your mind the whole time, and it's, and then you don't want to be the cause of, to sort of break up someone's flow or anything like that. But I think as a human being, you can tell when someone's having a moment of, you know, just a second to themselves or anything. And I don't creep up on people's, behind people on computers and sort of try and distract them by saying, how's the family, you know, because
and a little creepy,
maybe a little bit creepy, yeah. But it's, you know, it's just using your initiative and finding those moments where you can ask, you know, how people are and mean it, you know, because, all right, as we said before, it's nurturing those personal relationships. And although we may not be friends outside the building, we're all human beings. And I think it's really important, even on a tiny level, to remind people of that. Because, yeah, I seem to remember when I was, you know, working in various companies where the CEO was almost this untouchable kind of presence that, well, some people would, you'd never see them, you know. You'd hear they're in the building, but you'd never see them. And again, it's all about style and managing your time, because an absent CEO is useless. However much your head is in the game, you have to take it out sometimes and just check up on yourself as much as anything else, and the others around you.
Mm. James, that is a lovely place to finish up this conversation, because without me having shared this with you before, you've just highlighted really my core belief about leadership, which regular listeners of the show will have heard me say time and time again, but I'll say it again here because it is fundamental. Like, I really do believe it's a great privilege and responsibility to be a leader. And the reason I always say that is, as you just highlighted, every single person we lead or manage is a human being. And not only that, they are the most important person in the world to somebody else, right? And again, back to our point around balance and home lives, like, what we do, what we say, how we act and behave doesn't just affect those that work for us Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, right? It has an impact on them when they go home, and that spills over and has an impact on their friends and loved ones as well. So, yeah, it's a lovely, lovely chatting to you, James. And thank you for sharing your insights with us. I'm sure everybody listening will take a great deal of value from what you shared. So thank you very much, James.
Well, I hope so. Thanks, Ben.
Thank you for joining myself and James for this episode of the Ben Morton Leadership Podcast. And here is that big revelation that I promised. The man you were just listening to wasn't or isn't James Mitchell. The man you were just listening to is a good friend of mine called Jeff Nicholson. In fact, James Mitchell doesn't exist, nor to my knowledge does Vitality Core. So what on earth is going on, I hear you ask? Well, several months ago, I was listening to an episode of the Diary of a CEO podcast where Stephen Bartlett was interviewing Mo Gordat. Mo Gordat is the former chief business officer at Google X and the author of a book called Scary Smart that focuses on the rise and impact of artificial intelligence and advanced machine learning. As an aside here, that book, I truly believe right now, is essential, compulsory reading for anybody in any sort of leadership and management position. Anyway, during that podcast interview, Mo Gordat made the prediction that one day in the not too distant future, Stephen Bartlett would be sitting interviewing an AI as part of his podcast. And that got me thinking. And actually, that is exactly what you have just experienced. James Mitchell and Vitality Core was created for me by ChatGPT, by AI. I asked ChatGPT to create a persona of a MD or CEO. I gave it a little direction and it created this whole narrative about James and about the organization that he leads. Once that was done, I then interviewed ChatGPT via a typed conversation, just as I would a guest coming on the show. Once that was done, I exported the script, shared it with my good friend Jeff Nicholson, a former West End theatre actor. I interviewed him using the script that you've just heard. Okay, why though, I hear you ask? Well, I wanted to highlight some of the potential risks that AI creates. And more importantly, I wanted to highlight how important it is for all of us, regardless of our role or position or what we're doing for a living, but I wanted to highlight how important it is for us to be sure that the content we're consuming is from a valuable, trustworthy, true source. Now, James Mitchell, in the podcast episode you've just listened to, he gave some good advice. Maybe you'll agree with that, maybe you won't. I think his advice was generally solid, and yet there was nothing new to what he shared. There was no nuance to what he shared. There was nothing that was particularly revelatory for the majority of us, I suspect. So in that respect, what you just heard was a good example of what ChatGPT currently does best, i.e. it's great at scraping or trawling the internet for the most common data or the most aggregated data, so it can compile that and share it back with us. So I would love to know what you thought of the episode you've just heard and how it made you feel. So please do let me know wherever you're listening, in the comments or on my social media channels, or even drop me a line via email to chat@ben-morton.com to let me know what you thought and how it made you feel. But most importantly, here is my promise to you. Beyond what you have just listened to, all of the content that I share with you across all mediums will always be my own. It will always be thoroughly researched from credible sources to the very best of my ability. I do what I do because I am passionate about making a difference in the world by enabling leaders to be the very best leaders that they can be, so that they can have a positive impact on the people that they have the privilege and responsibility to lead, and so that those people can deliver the results that we're accountable for as leaders. And I truly believe that as leaders, we have a huge impact on those that we lead, on their loved ones, and there's this enormous ripple effect where our words, actions, and deeds send out ripples of impact that reach way beyond the organizational boundaries for which we work. And finally, I'm sure you'll agree, right now, the world really does need great leaders and strong leadership, perhaps more than ever. Until next time, folks, look after yourself, look after those you've got the privilege and responsibility to lead, and as always, lead on. Hi there. If you are listening to the very, very end of this episode, here is a little bit of fun, something a little more lighthearted for you, here are a few of the bloopers that were edited out of the recording of this episode with my good friend Jeff Nicholson. Enjoy.
Effective leadership requires the ability to make tough decisions. Communicate early, sorry, clearly. Push the button.
Click.
In my experience of working with leaders at your level, I frequently,
Let me push the button.
So what's the biggest leadership challenge you've faced and what did you learn from it?
One of the biggest leadership challenges I faced in my career was during a period of significant organizational change. Have often been filtered through multiple layers. It's challenging. No. I skipped a fucking bit. I was like, this isn't making sense. Oh.
It was really good. It was really good, though.
I was like, this isn't making sense. Wait.
Until you lost your thread, it was really good.